Lance, how's it going?
It's going fine. How about for you?
Good. So, you know, one thing that we haven't discussed in detail is a scouting report for the Bainville High School girls basketball team.
We can't give out that kind of information, man. This is public airwaves. It's secret. We keep it under the vest.
Okay, well, how about preseason ranking?
Well, in our district, I think the other teams voted us first, which is kind of surprising. Intimidating too, but, you know, that's where we stand right now. It's going to be interesting. There's eight teams in our district. We just got to beat more than we lose to move on. But, yeah, right now, I guess that's where we're at.
And who are your biggest opponents as far as threats to a good season and a conference championship?
There's this town called Plentywood. They're the biggest school in our district. They're routinely at the top, especially in girls basketball. They moved down from a bigger class probably about 10 years ago now, and every year they've been at the top of the district, usually within the top four, I want to say. Most of the time they're in that top two. So they're going to be tough again.
Well, I want you to know after that, following it closely all winter.
Yeah, it'll be exciting.
Absolutely. You ready to start the show?
Yeah, I think so.
Greetings, listeners. This is the FCS Wedge Podcast, Week 15, Episode 278. We're going to cover what happened this last weekend in the quarterfinal games. Some pretty exciting outcomes. One game in particular was a nail-biter. I was on the edge of my seat, even though I'm opposed to at least one of the teams that were playing that night. But we'll get to that in a second. Joining me is Lance Burnt, longtime partner in crime, and he hails from Bainville, Montana. I'm in Cheney, Washington, so let's get this show on the road. First game we're going to look at, it happened last Friday. I do love these night games in the playoffs. Washington Grizzly Stadium is an absolute cool place to feature FCS football in. And this was a tight one, Lance. Montana 35, Furman 28.
Well, yeah, and both teams came out hot. First quarter ended, it was 14-14. It was just like, wow, two of the top defenses in the country. Is this going to be a runaway? Well, the defenses started stepping up after that. Montana only scored six in the second quarter, shut out Furman. Second half, Montana did not have an offensive touchdown. But late in the game, after Montana had thrown an interception, Furman gets a touchdown with the short field. Montana goes down, misses a field goal. There's a few punts, and then finally, with just under 10 minutes left in the game, Junior Bergen takes it to the house, puts the Grizz up seven. He took it to the house on a punt return touchdown, put the Grizz up seven. Furman, though, with a minute 24 left, they drive all the way down the field and get a touchdown right at pretty much the buzzer and get them in to overtime, 28-28. Overtime goes, of course, the Grizz way. As we know, they get a quick score. Furman is not able to score. Grizz win 35-28, but a very good battle.
Yeah, it was. Both defenses played well. You know, it was surprising some of the stats that Tyler Huff hits that slant route on their first possession after Bergen returns the opening kickoff for a score. And Colton Hinton takes it to the house 70 yards. But then the rest of the night, Huff goes 16 of 47. For just 188, rushing yards were hard to come by for both teams. You know, Montana, obviously two special team scores, or maybe it's a different outcome, but, you know, there's three phases of the game. You got to excel in all of them. And what about you, Lance? It seems like this year's playoffs, we've seen a lot of games won and lost on special teams.
And that's usually the case a lot in the FCS. There's a little bit more dynamic to the special teams. You get up in the FBS, especially the upper level, and most of those field goal kickers are pretty darn good. You could kind of expect what's going to happen most of the time. But here down the FCS, sometimes you get a kicker that's awful or a return man that's just faster than everybody on the field, and it kind of turns into a chance to get big plays. And those were what helped Montana here, that's for sure.
Or you also get some special teams players that have just crushed it all season, played well. And then, you know, right when it comes down to it, you know, late in the playoffs, and they make a mistake. These are kids. They're human. We've seen it that play out quite a bit as well. Next game we're going to look at, South Dakota State. Outcome wasn't a surprise. They beat Villanova 23-12. I think that the lack of offense was a little bit of a surprise, but there were some extenuating circumstances.
Yes, for sure. I mean, on that day, I know people were wondering about fans not being there, but at least in North Dakota, I didn't check in South Dakota, but the entire interstate was shut down. It was closed because of just terrible weather. They had just gotten a recent snowstorm, and then it was over 30-mile-an-hour winds, sustained, so gusts well above that. So it was not easy to get to the game, but then at the game, not easy to do anything. I mean, it was very, very windy. It wasn't just like a, 20-mile-an-hour would be a very windy game. This was much higher than that. So passing was just almost impossible to come by. So it came down to the ground game, and Villanova hung in there tough. They're stopping the South Dakota State run in the first half. They just couldn't execute on the end of drives, held to field goals, missed an extra point on one of the touchdowns, and South Dakota State starts dominating the second half running the ball. Isaiah Davis, 192 yards on 27 carries. His play in the second half got them the win. They move on 23-12. Good win for the Jackrabbits.
In another special teams play, Jacks return a block punt late in the second quarter. That's when they took the lead. It was real tight up until then. But with that defense, they can play with the lead. And the defense continues to get better and better, it seems like. Next game, not close. North Dakota State goes into Vermillion and absolutely lambastes South Dakota 45-17.
And you were kind of waiting for this to happen to South Dakota. They had been playing with house money too long. You look down the line, they had 1, 2, 3, 4 different single-digit wins in the regular season, and their one loss was a blowout loss to South Dakota State. So a team jumps on them right away, and they kind of fall apart, and that's what happened here. North Dakota State just came out with a completely different game plan than they've come out all year, and it works. They were efficient on offense. They even had, you talk about special teams, they had an 82-yard punt return for a touchdown, put them up 21-3, and kind of started slamming the door on this game. South Dakota, University of South Dakota could not find any sort of response and just ends up getting blown out.
Yeah, looking at some of the stats, Cam Miller, 13-15 for 210 and a touchdown. Backup quarterback Cole Payton, you can tell he's a quarterback just from his running style, but it's effective. He rushes it 6 times for 66 yards, 2 touchdowns. Bison held the Yotes to 52 yards rushing. So when you're in a game like that, you need to at least get some first downs and keep North Dakota State off the field a little bit. And maybe that's the difference between this year's team and previous teams, in that with the improved passing attack, games like this, which used to be, more like 33-7, where North Dakota State dominated limited possessions and stuff like that, they're scoring more points now. They're a dangerous team for sure. Last game.
And I just want to give a quick shout out to all those NDSU fans who a couple months ago said NDSU wouldn't even sniff the playoffs and wouldn't even admit to any sort of alternative talk. Just wanted to shout out to them real quick.
Well, you living in Fargo all those years, their sandbagging definitely wore off on you. So you got to study it up close and personal, and I think that's a fair shot to take at them. We're going to take a look at, from the Kibbe Dome, another entertaining game at least. Albany flies across the country, pulls off the mild upset, 30-22 over the University of Idaho.
This was such a weird game. And funny, I mentioned it. Not really by score, results, or whatever, but it just kind of reminded me of that Maine Weber State game where it's just like, Idaho, come on. Come on, Idaho. And they just never could slam the door. They're up. They did not trail for the first, goodness, how long was it? For the first 55 minutes of the game, they had a lead. Finally, Albany scores a touchdown to go ahead, 4:38 left in the fourth quarter, and then they score another touchdown after an Idaho turnover, I believe. Giovanni McCoy fumble, and then that's the game. Here's Idaho. They were technically in control the whole way and then just could not close the door. Solid performance by Albany. Going on the road, tough place to play, and they had a pretty solid game on both sides. Reese Poffenbarger throws for 341 and 3 touchdowns. Griffin Waddell runs for 98 yards. Brevin Easton, player of the game, he caught 9 catches for 228 yards, 3 touchdowns. Just a dominating performance. Outshines Hayden Hatton, who caught 12 for 135. I mean, just Idaho played a very good game, but Albany was much better at execution. They made the plays when it mattered. They scored the touchdowns when it mattered. And that's what pushed for the win in this game.
Yeah, and their defense got better throughout the game, at least as far as the line of scrimmage goes. You know, we heard all game long, and we'd really heard all season, you know, that they're pretty stout up front. Idaho had some success. I mean, let's face it, they totaled like 360, 370 yards of total offense. But, you know, they missed some field goals. Chavez went 3 of 6. He also had a poor punting game. So going back to my earlier statement, sometimes you have good players that have bad games. And unfortunately for that young man, it came at the wrong time here. But you could see in the second half especially that Albany's front four were starting to wear down Idaho a little bit. A little bit more disruption. McCoy wasn't as efficient in the second half as he was in the first. They seemed like they were a little bit off of tempo. And, yeah, you're right. You kept waiting like that Weber State game for Idaho to pull one out, and they just never did, and then made a couple of mistakes, costly mistakes at the end, and that was the difference. So, Lance, question for you. Let's take a look back at the season. Both you and I have been critical of the CAA and SoCon. So do you want to take back your criticism a little bit now that they each have a team in the semifinals?
Chris, I'm disappointed in you. I was about to ask a question about this, and you set me up with a question. There is no SoCon team in the semifinals.
I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. So scratch the SoCon. They can rot in obscurity. But you know what? Furman is in the SoCon. Furman played well. They had a shot to win in Missoula. So given Furman's play last Friday in Albany moving on to the semifinals, would you like to take back your criticism a little bit?
No, because what I kept saying about the CAA was they were just this bloated conference that I still stand by the fact that 11 of those teams sucked. Albany had a road loss to a New Hampshire team that didn't finish that well, but Montana had a road loss to Northern Arizona that did not finish that well. You have those losses or whatever, but the rest of the conference was just trash. So they stood out from it, but I still stand by my fact or my point that outside of Villanova, Albany, I mean, the CAA was just terrible. And then the SoCon had a very – usually they're more balanced. Usually it's like, who's going to win in the SoCon? It's going to be – or will the winner in the SoCon have 2 conference losses or 3? Well, this year you had 4 guaranteed wins. You were going to beat BMI. You were going to beat East Tennessee State, Wofford, and the Citadel. Of course, Furman lost to Wofford, but those teams were just bad. So it was kind of a weird year in SoCon, and one team did play well. I mean, we knew Furman was solid all year. It was just hard to gauge them considering they didn't really play a great deal of non-conference, and then had their teams or whatever. But you know, they showed up to play in this game. The CAA, though, I still stand by that one. My question I was going to ask you, are you popping champagne this weekend for the SoCon yet again not getting a team to the semis? I don't know when the last time they got one to the semis.
I think it may have been Georgia Southern in their last year or second to last year. Didn't they make the semis against North Dakota State? Or was that earlier?
It's possible.
I think one of their
losses was the semis, but because Wofford, I was thinking back, they lost in the quarterfinals to Youngstown that year. That Youngstown came to Eastern Washington and the Eagles choked the life away. But
I know Georgia Southern lost to Delaware in the semifinals in 2010.
Okay,
but yeah, it's been a hot minute, and I think with yes, I popped the champagne. I think that. You know, Furman, like you mentioned, we weren't down on them necessarily. We just didn't know. We didn't. It's not like we were going to move them out of the top 10, you know, once they were 8-1 or whatever. But let's face it, they did what they were supposed to. They picked up a couple of wins you know, in the playoffs. Let's see, were they seeded? I'd have to go back and look. But the same thing.
To be fair, hang on, Chris.
Right? Yeah.
To do the Chris Callum devil's advocate, Furman won one game in the playoffs. Sure, they lost in overtime or whatever, but they won one game in the playoffs against the SoCon team. That's what Chris will say next year. Yeah, Furman was in the quarterfinals, but they beat a team from the SoCon. Let's prove you can beat someone from outside the SoCon. So I'm just kind of setting you up for next year. But
thank you. I appreciate that. And that's kind of my point. I mean, Villanova's in the same boat. I mean, it's not like Villanova did anything, you know, that they weren't supposed to do. They beat Youngstown State. They gave up some points to Youngstown State as well. But, you know, Albany, they're in the semis. They're legit. And we weren't down on Albany either, really. We both, I think, were fairly early in recognizing that, hey, you know, they have a couple of FBS losses. They have one FCS loss to New Hampshire. They played fairly well in both those FBS games. You know, so I think they kind of did what they're supposed to. What I would say, or maybe a question back to you, you put Albany in the Missouri Valley Conference, you put Villanova, or you put Furman in the Big Sky, do you think they have a different record? Do you think they have one more loss? Do you think that maybe they even have more than that? Are they that much better than you know, a North Dakota that barely made the playoffs, or Southern Illinois, or a UC Davis that was left home? I'm not sure they are.
That's always impossible to tell, just because you don't get those border teams in the playoffs even. So it's hard to say a UC Davis that doesn't get in is better than a team that does. I mean, that's just impossible, because there's no way for those teams to be able to play one another. But, I mean, you could conjecture, but I still think UC Davis had a lot of flaws.
I mean, when we're comparing resumes, whether it's week 4 or week 8 or week 12, you know, we're looking at, you know, the totality of their schedule and who they played and what their strength of schedule was and how they fared, you know. So I think it's an interesting debate. I mean, it's pointless, I guess, in that you're never going to have a firm answer. But I would say I'm not positive that Albany wouldn't have picked up another loss. All you have to do is look at Montana's conference loss, right? I think Northern Arizona could have went into the SoCon or went in to the CAA, and I think they could have beat the top team from each of those conferences on any given Saturday. And so I'm defending our position a little bit here, Lance. Help me out.
Oh, yeah, I always have to go against you no matter what's going on.
That's true. That's very true. You do always have to go against me. You are quite the contrarian. Well, that's going to do it for this week's recap show. I would like to thank our producer, Troy Burnt, in Missoula, for putting everything together for us each and every single week. Thank you to my partner, Lance Burnt, who is, he might be a contrarian, but he makes a lot of great points in this show. And we will also have a preview show for the semifinals coming out soon. Until then, have a good one.